Today on Family Talk. Hello, and welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. If you have access to any media outlet, you've probably heard something about the so-called contraceptive mandate of the Affordable Care Act. So you already know that big businesses like Hobby Lobby and small ministries like Little Sisters of the Poor are battling all the way to the Supreme Court to protect their religious liberty. You may not know that Family Talk is also heavily involved in that battle. And today, we're going to share some of the details about what's really at stake in this fight. A couple of days ago, Dr. Dobson sat down with our corporate lawyer, Martin Nussbaum, to get an update on this mandate. Let's listen in now as Dr. Dobson introduces our guests on today's edition of Family Talk.
I have with me a great friend. He's our corporate attorney, Martin Nussbaum, and he's an attorney with Lewis Rocha Rothberger and Christie LLP. Mr. Nussbaum's private practice is serving churches, denominations, religious schools, and other ministries. He serves as general counsel for many religious institutions. He also serves or has served as litigation counsel, First Amendment counsel, amicus counsel, and consulting counsel in trial and appellate courts around the country. He is very, very well known throughout the country and especially for the organizations like ours that are trying to do the Lord's work to the best of our ability. And this is not an easy time to be in that business, I can tell you. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Martin Nussbaum went to the University of Texas Austin Law School, received his JD, and he's a Weaver Fellow. I don't know what that is, but it sounds impressive. He got his BA from the University of Notre Dame, 1974, graduated summa cum laude. And this is a very bright man who is doing great work for many organizations, and we're thankful to have you with us.
Jim, it's good to be with you today.
And I said we were going to talk about something that is important to a lot of people. It's also worthy of outrage because of what our federal government, the Obama administration, has done to pro-life organizations like ours. Kind of summarize for those who don't know the journey that we've been on and are still on. Today.
Well, the Affordable Care Act, as you may recall, passed with a promise from the president to Representative Bart Stupak that this won't be about abortion. And Stupak, who was a pro-life Democrat, insisted that the president issue an executive order that said there wouldn't be any abortion funding in the act. And the implication was it's that the Affordable Care Act wasn't about abortion. And what happened is that sometime later in the regulatory process implementing the act, the act had a provision in it which said that all plans should include preventive services for women. That was the phrase. And Senator Barbara Mikulski, who was the proponent of that amendment to add preventive services for the women, went on the floor of the Senate. And I'm going to give you a quote from what she said because it's just really rather remarkable. She went on the floor of the Senate and she was said that there was some rumor that the act was going to be about abortion. What she said was, "Alert, alert, alert. We have just been informed that a shrill advocacy group is spreading lies about this amendment." That's the Preventive Services Amendment.
Yes.
And then she went on to say, "They are saying that because it is prevention, it includes abortion services. There are no abortion services included in the Mikulski Amendment," end of quote. Well, this regulation, that was in December 2009, when she said that on the floor of the Senate. And then about a year later, a regulation came out that mandated that every employer's plan other than grandfathered plans must include what the government called contraceptive services. That word itself was deceptive, Dr. Dobson, because that word implied there were no contraceptives or that there had would be contraceptives would be mandated. But the contraceptives had been redefined to include abortion-inducing drugs and devices, sterilization, and related counseling.
called abortifacients.
Called abortifacients, but in the government speak and in the regulation, everything's called contraceptives. So every plan is mandated to include abortion-inducing drugs and abortion-inducing devices, even though everybody had promised this wasn't about abortion. So that mandate landed on Family Talk, and it landed on lots of other ministries, and it also landed on a lot of closely held for-profit employers. This is pretty devious. The words of the statute say women's preventive services. It doesn't say abortion. But I have to imagine that they knew that that phrase was capable when they got busy with the regulations to make it susceptible to include abortifacients, and that's exactly what they've done. I'll tell you something else. There's also in that statute a provision that says that no one in the provision of their plans can discriminate on the basis of sex, among other protected classifications. And on September 8th of last year, the administration proposed yet another regulation. It's a proposed rule at this point that says, let's interpret here what this means to not discriminate on the basis of sex. Well, it means at least the following things this proposed rule says. It means that employers must include abortion, surgical abortion in their plans. They must cover gender assignment services. And when I say that, think of the facial reconstruction for Bruce Jenner. That would be part of what would be mandated in a plan. And it must include, if you have spousal coverage, to include same-sex spouses. That's a proposed rule. That's not final. That wasn't in the statute. All that was in the statute is you can't discriminate on the basis of sex. So there are a lot of little surprises, not little surprises, frankly, tragic surprises here. And to get back to the original mandate, which was the so-called preventive services mandate that came to be an abortifacient mandate, the fine on an employer like Family Talk or the Little Sisters of the Poor or Hobby Lobby for not complying with that is $36,500 per employee per year. It's like a death penalty, right?
Nobody could sustain that.
And I'll tell you more. If an employer decided to have no plan whatsoever, drop all insurance coverage for their employee, the fine for that is $2,000 per employee per year. So if you give full medical care to your employees, but not contraceptives and abortifacients, the fine is 18 times as much as if you give that employee nothing.
Now, we're a family ministry, and the people who work here are part of our family. That's the way we feel about it. So even if we could not offer them health care, we don't feel it's right to do that because these are families. They have children. They have the same needs that everybody has in the health care arena. And so it puts us in a terrible position of either offering abortifacients or forcing our employees not to have health care. I need to remind our listeners of what an abortifacient is. It is a drug like the morning after pill, which has the capacity to keep a fertilized egg, an embryo, from attaching to the uterine wall and can cause death. So that's where it is related to abortion. We can't do that. We won't do that. And as you know, I wrote a letter to our constituency where I said, we will not do this. And in fact, I sent a copy of it to the president saying, sir, we consider this to be immoral and evil, and we will not do it. Come get me. That's the phrase from the letter. Well, here we are all these years later, and they're still after us.
Yes. And that's precisely why Family Talk, looking at its choices, because it wasn't going to comply with the mandate, had a choice to pay a fine or go to court. And you authorized the ministry to go to court, and I was honored to working with the Alliance
Defending
Freedom.
Board of Directors approved that 100%.
It's on hold.
Let me back up and make sure everybody understands. Yes. We did get a favorable ruling from a federal court.
We at both the trial court level, we did. Our district judge ruled for Family Talk, and then the government appealed that decision to the United States Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit. And then that case has essentially been put on hold, which it's called under abeyance in lawyer speak, and it's sitting there on hold until the court decides what's going to happen in the Little Sisters of the Poor and the other cases that will be argued on March 23 of this year.
Now, we come to the absolutely tragic moment in the history of the court, certainly from the point of view of those of us who believe in traditional values and pro-life principles and so on. But Shirley and I were sitting on the couch on a Saturday afternoon not long ago, and we were reading the Bible and having our prayer. We often do that. And the phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was from Becky Lane, a former employee of Family Talk and a great lady. And she called to tell me that Antonin Scalia had died. He was the most conservative member of the court, and so much depended on him. Explain the ramifications of his passing.
Well, first I have to note we've lost a good man. He was a family man. He was a devout Catholic. He had nine children. He just was devoted to his family and raised many successful kids that are making the world a better place. But in addition to that, he was one of the finest jurists ever to sit on the United States Supreme Court. And Justice Scalia had a particular judicial philosophy that's really not conservative or liberal, because he didn't care about the politics. He cared about the rule of law. And he says, when we as justices are asked to interpret what the Constitution means or what a federal statute means, we're to look at the words and apply the words to mean what they say. And if there's any doubt of what they say, we need to look at what was the intent behind those words.
He called that an originalist
position. That's exactly right. And in that, it's constitutionally conservative. It's not politically conservative. So he followed the law where it did. And in that sense, it wasn't about him. It was about those elected officials who had created the Constitution, and he was to apply their words to current meaning. And it's a huge loss. And frankly, it's a huge loss in the Little Sisters of the Poor case, because the prequel to the Little Sisters case was the Hobby Lobby decision, which is under slightly different regulatory regime under the Affordable Care Act regulations. And that was a 5-4 decision. Without Justice Scalia, that would have been a tie decision. So the loss of Justice Scalia is huge. It's huge in this case and many other cases.
Remind us of the work that the Little Sisters of the Poor do and have done.
I'm so grateful you asked that question. My great aunt was a Little Sister of the Poor. Her name was Sister Melanie. She went in as a young girl. She was assigned to work in one of their nursing homes. And they live, their convents are right next to those nursing homes during post-war France. And they would beg. They would, if they needed food, if they needed linens for the beds, they would go to the linen company in town dressed as nuns, and they would ask for some 100 – can you have 100 sheets you could give us today? And it's – their life is not about them. And the sweetest thing they do, Dr. Dobson, is when one of their residents is near death, they don't leave that resident's side. They pray with that resident and sing hymns and pray that person right into paradise. That's what they do. They are as close to Mother Teresa as any religious order I know of in this country.
And to have the government come down upon them and essentially threaten them with horrendous fines that could put them out of business.
It would. No, it would. They can't run their nursing homes paying an additional $36,500 per employee per year. And so by coming forward, they've been very courageous, because it's to paint a target on their backs that if they don't win their case, guess what, the government, where they're going to enforce the mandate first on these plaintiffs that have been courageous to come forward and try to vindicate their religious freedom.
Now, the outcome of the Little Sisters of the Poor in the Supreme Court relates to Family Talk. How? We're directly linked in some ways.
You are, because the Tenth Circuit has, which is where Family Talk is located, has been very momentous in the overall litigation around this. And we're in the midst of historic litigation. Never in American history have so many organizations of faith filed so many lawsuits to vindicate their freedom vis-a-vis one federal law. We have over 105 lawsuits that have been filed, 105 lawsuits. And the Hobby Lobby case was decided by the Tenth Circuit favorably before it went to the Supreme Court. The Little Sisters of the Poor case was decided unfavorably by the Tenth Circuit before it went to the Supreme Court. So there's a couple of possibilities. One possibility is that the United States Supreme Court will say, let's not hear this term. We know there's an Eighth Circuit decision also pending at the Supreme Court that's not with the main group. If we have a 4-4 tie on the main group, we're still going to have a split between the circuits, and we're going to have to hear the Eighth Circuit decision. So they might decide to put it over. On the other hand, the argument date is still set for March 23. If there's a 4-4 tie, and that is the groupings of justices say the same as they were in Hobby Lobby, but without Justice Scalia's deciding vote, that means the Tenth Circuit decision stands. If it stands, that makes Family Talk's course more challenging. And given that we're in litigation, I really don't want to get into too much more about what our strategy would be if that happens. But we frankly think that we have some new arguments that the Tenth Circuit, we hope, would consider that were not considered the first time around. But we're looking at an adverse precedent, which is a higher hill to climb.
Yeah, there's certainly a possibility that this organization could essentially be forced to close its doors.
It is an existential threat if you won't bend on this issue.
And we will not.
Yeah. And the board, I know, is of like mind around that. So the third possibility is that probably Justice Kennedy might become a swing vote and side with the dissenters in the Hobby Lobby case. Then you would have a 5-3 adverse majority. That would also make things more complicated, very difficult for every ministry in the country. We have some plans for that, and we can get to that later
now,
in this program.
You talked about more than 100 other organizations that have filed a lawsuit. They're in the same boat?
Well, actually, it's more than 100 other lawsuits because those lawsuits have more than one plaintiff in them in most cases. For the Family Talk is a single plaintiff case. So there's hundreds of plaintiffs that have come forward. I have two other cases myself. And all of them are actually in the same boat right now because after Hobby Lobby won its case, the government issued a new regulation that essentially stole Hobby Lobby's victory. Hobby Lobby has now been moved from a category of regulation that was unique to closely held for-profit employers, and they've now been put in the same bucket as the non-exempt ministries. So if the Little Sisters lose their case, that would be devastating for Hobby Lobby because they're in the same pool as the Little Sisters now. And that itself is frankly outrageous that someone would take a case all the way to the Supreme Court that would risk millions of dollars of fines, as Hobby Lobby did, only to have the administration through its regulatory apparatus take that decision away from them.
We're talking to Martin Nussbaum, who's a very well-known attorney who serves not only Family Talk, but many other Christian ministries and organizations. Martin, we feel the hostility coming from the White House. We've been aware of it since Barack Obama took office. Does he have other plans for us in this the remaining 11 months that he has in office?
One of those plans is already on us, and I'm not typically a conspiracy theory person, but I think there is reason to feel hostility because when the contraceptive abortifacient mandate was first promulgated, you have to remember this same government exempted grandfathered plans. Those grandfathered plans, at the time that the abortifacient mandate was announced, exempted plans that covered somewhere around 70 million employees. Now, those are employers that may not be conscientiously opposed to the abortifacient mandate, but they were exempted, while ministries like the Little Sisters and Family Talk were not exempted.
Most churches were exempted.
So there was, after complaint from the faith community, an exemption for what the government called religious employers. Well, if the Little Sisters of the Poor and Family Talk aren't religious employers, it's pretty difficult to know what one is.
And the conclusion is, we're a religious organization, but we're not religious enough.
Correct.
Or Christian enough.
Correct.
That's
so
insulting in itself.
Of course it is. And it's also discriminatory between different types of religion. And if there's anything the Establishment Clause forbids, it's government favoring one type of religion over the others. But here's the other problem that's here right now, and it hasn't been given much press, frankly. Within the Affordable Care Act is something called the clinical trial mandate, which says employers must cover in their plans the administrative costs for clinical trials. Well, those clinical trials are approved by the FDA, and the FDA has already approved a number of clinical trials that most Christian employers are going to find morally unacceptable. There are two today, for example, that involve the utilization of embryonic stem cells. And you can't get embryonic stem cells without the destruction of fertilized eggs, which is an abortion. And there's also seven that are active today that utilize fetal tissue, which is the harvest of neural tissue or brains from aborted fetuses or babies and other tissue from them. So today, and there's no employer except grandfathered plans that are exempt from this clinical trial mandate in the United States today. And probably almost none of those employers have any idea that they're paying for medical services for their employees that would be based upon utilizing organs harvested from aborted fetuses.
It's becoming extremely difficult for churches and ministries that want to live by a set of biblical principles and are determined to do so, to even be able to do that in the environment that we're living in.
That's right. And in fact, this redefinition of the word contraceptive to include abortifacients, we have many ministry clients that when they look at their insurance policy, the policy will say no abortions covered. What that means is no surgical abortions, but we do cover contraceptives. And for most Protestant ministries, they think, well, that's fine. We're opposed to abortion. We're in favor of contraceptives. We permit using that. What they don't know is contraceptives includes abortifacients. So they'll look at their policy and think, this complies with my beliefs, but it doesn't. It doesn't, because the government has redefined these words to mean something that's not the natural meaning of them.
Well, let's fast forward to the bottom line. For organizations like ours, we only have 40 full-time employees, and the fine for not complying with this mandate is close to $1.5 million per year. We can't afford that. So what are organizations like ours supposed to do?
Well, today, I think there's really two options that people ought to explore. For Catholic employers, they ought to look at something called the Catholic Benefits Association. And for Protestant and especially evangelical Protestant employers, they ought to look at the Christian Employers Alliance. Both of those organizations, they have been formed to provide moral solutions for their employers that comport with their particular religious values. The Catholic Benefits Association has hundreds of employers in its membership that are exempt from the mandate through, frankly, litigation that we did on behalf of the large group. And the Christian Employers Alliance, which is about a year behind the Catholic Benefits Association, is planning to do something similar. So for fairly low cost per employee, in fact, rather extremely low cost per employee, they provide a variety of services, including litigation services, to help acquire exemptions.
Is there a downside to doing that?
No, there's no downside to do that. The only is this small cost. And you know, if you think of the cost, it runs in the case of the Christian Employers Alliance, $3 per employee per month. And those are employees that the employer is typically paying around $1,000 a month for their medical premium for those employees. So it's a small surcharge. And then you've got an organization with the very best skills and the very best tactical sense that's fighting for them to allow them to act consistently with their faith. And they're at ChristianEmployersAlliance.org, and the Catholic Benefits is CatholicBenefitsAssociation.com.
We're out of time. Our guest has been Martin Nussbaum, the corporate attorney for Family Talk and so many other organizations. Thank you for clarifying this issue, and it's good to know that there is some wiggle room, at least, if it comes to the worst.
Yes, good to be with you. Thank you for giving us
this
time.
Thank you, Martin.
Okay.
We appreciate you.
All right.
You can see why legislation like the so-called contraceptive mandate feels like a war against religious liberty. That's why I'm glad we're able to end our show today with information about two organizations that help ministries fight against this mandate. the Catholic Benefits Association, and the Christian Employers Alliance. If you missed the contact information, you can find it again on our website, drjamesdobson.org. You know, one of the reasons we can stand up against this type of legislation is because we're a donor-supported ministry. That's why we appreciate and carefully steward every dollar you entrust us with. And this month, to say thank you for a gift of $20 or more, we'll send you a copy of 10 Habits of Happy Mothers by Dr. Meg Meeker. You can give online at drjamesdobson.org or call us at 877-732-6825. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.